From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Pamela Wu, in for Beth Ruyak. We begin with news from the White House, where President Trump is calling for the Justice Department to investigate whether the Obama administration ordered surveillance of his presidential campaign. As is often the case with this president, the announcement came in a tweet. Meanwhile, we've just marked the one-year anniversary of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into whether the Trump campaign coordinated with Russia to influence the 2016 election. This morning, we are joined by political junkie Ken Rudin to cover this and all things political. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Pamela.
So, Ken, I find myself saying this a lot. The president sure likes to tweet, and he tweeted yesterday, "I hereby demand and will do so officially tomorrow that the Department of Justice look into whether or not the FBI, DOJ, infiltrated or surveilled the Trump campaign for political purposes, and if any such demands or requests were made by people within the Obama administration." Ken, can you provide the background and context of this tweet for us?
Well, the president has been convinced, because it's been repeated over and over again on conservative media, mostly on Fox News, but elsewhere, Breitbart as well, that the Obama administration or somebody like that inserted a spy into the Obama administration Justice Department, put a spy inside the Trump campaign, basically to find out what it knew. And Trump has been very livid about this. The fact that he says, "I hereby demand," I mean, usually one thinks that the attorney general doesn't succumb to demands from the White House. But having said that, this has been a bugaboo for President Trump for a long time, that somebody was out to get him from the beginning, from the Obama administration, and they put a spy in. What happened was, of course, is that the FBI was looking at two Trump campaign officials, Carter Page and George Papadopoulos, who ostensibly had ties with Russia. And so the FBI was investigating that, and that's why there was somebody inside the Trump campaign talking to these two folks. So Trump has been livid a bit. Of course, it's also part of his game, part of his strategy to get rid of, Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, who basically is in charge of the Mueller investigation. Rosenstein is the guy who appointed Mueller to begin with, and he's in charge of the investigation. And Trump obviously is not going to can't legally fire Mueller, but he certainly can get rid of Rosenstein.
Well, we just saw the one-year anniversary of the Mueller investigation. That happened a few days ago. And in the past year, Special Counsel Mueller has charged 19 people and gotten 5 guilty pleas. And Kent, there seem to be new developments constantly.
Well, basically that belies the Trump argument that this is just a witch hunt, that it's just fake and there's nothing to it. Obviously, if you get 19 indictments, it's not just because of a biased system. There must be, if you have 5 guilty pleas and 19 indictments, there must be something going on. We don't know for sure. Nobody seems to know for sure, other than the president himself, who insists there's no collusion. We don't know if there's collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia during the 2016 campaign and election. And that's what Mueller's been looking into all along. But to say that, after a year, this has been a waste of public money and there's nothing there, I think the fact, as you say, that there's 19 indictments, 5, I'm sorry, 19 indictments and 5 guilty pleas, that certainly belies that argument.
And Robert Mueller is not the only lawyer investigating President Trump. I feel like I can't turn on the TV these days without seeing Stormy Daniels attorney Michael Avenatti.
Well, Michael Avenatti is perhaps as good as a self-promoter as President Trump is. And it's almost Avenatti is enjoying every bit of this. I mean, the fact is that so many people believe Stormy Daniels more than they do President Trump about their alleged relationship back in the day. Just says a lot about the confidence that people have in the president. But Avenatti is, publicly out there almost every day bashing, as much as he's bashing President Trump, he's bashing Michael Cohen, the attorney who ostensibly offered the $130,000 payoff hush money to Stormy Daniels to keep quiet about her affair. So Avenatti is enjoying this very much, and so is Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani being the president's lawyer, he is everywhere. I mean, sometimes I think he hurts the president's cause by saying things that he has to backtrack on. At one point, President Trump had to say, it would be nice if Rudy knew the facts. But, by coming forward and saying that that Mueller's investigation is going to end on September 1st. Basically, Giuliani is daring Mueller to continue the investigation beyond September 1st and as we approach the fall election campaign, which, of course, Trump and the Republicans are deathly afraid of.
And we are talking about the midterm elections and other political matters this morning with political junkie Ken Rudin on Insight. Ken, let's talk about the recent school shooting in Texas. I'd like to hear your take on how various elected leaders responded to the latest mass shooting.
Well, you know, something, I mean, it's more of the same. It's, you know, there was a fascinating video that went viral with a student who said that she was not surprised by this. Matter of fact, she was expecting it to happen. You wonder how many high school students feel this way with this school violence going on around the country. But what was different about Texas, certainly different than what we saw in Parkland School in Florida a while back, is that in Texas, views of guns have not changed. The views of the governor, Governor Greg Abbott, and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and Ted Cruz, a senator who's also up for re-election this year, they offer the thoughts and prayers to the families, of course. But there's no indication that the state legislature or any members of Congress from Texas are going to push for more gun measures, unlike what we saw in Florida with even Rick Scott, who's running for the Senate. Governor Rick Scott has signed some gun control measures. But I mean, ultimately, what can you say about this tragedy? What law could have changed it? This kid apparently took his father's guns, which were apparently legally purchased. So other than taking his father's guns without permission, I mean, the guns were not illegal guns. It's just that he had no business having them to begin with. And that there goes the argument that, well, what laws can we pass in Congress that would have changed this? And apparently the answer is nothing.
It is interesting, as you note, that the reaction has been different than it was following the Parkland shooting. We have some audio of Texas Governor Greg Abbott speaking out about the shooting. Let's take a listen.
We need to do more than just pray for the victims and their families. It's time in Texas that we take action to step up and make sure this tragedy is never repeated ever again in the history of the state of Texas.
Ken Rudin, your thoughts on Governor Abbott's comments?
Yeah, I mean, yes, it shouldn't happen again, and we should do what we can. But basically, everything I've seen as far as a possible solution is limiting the numbers of entrances and exits to schools and arming school teachers. Nothing about, I mean, how do you keep guns out of the hands of people if who shouldn't have it, if these guns were legally offered? So, yes, I mean, Governor Abbott is talking about this should never happen again. And I think everybody's on the same page of that. But whether arming teachers and limiting the exits and entrances to schools in Texas is going to change anything, that remains to be seen.
Let's talk about political matters here in our state, the Golden State. In California, President Trump just endorsed Republican candidate John Cox for governor over the more conservative Travis Allen. Your take on that?
Well, it looks like, I mean, the president, look, I think the president perhaps learned a lesson with his support for Roy Moore last year in that Alabama special campaign, when most people felt that Roy Moore was the least likely to succeed in that election, the most beleaguered, the most challenged, ethically challenged candidate the Republicans could have put up with. And we saw that a few weeks ago in West Virginia, when the president urged the defeat of Don Blankenship, the former coal executive who went to prison for a year in the aftermath of his coal of a coal mine that killed a disaster that killed 29 miners. The point is that, you know, backing John Cox over Travis Allen may be an indication that the president thinks Cox is more has a better chance of winning, and maybe he's looking more at his political advisors have been urging him that let's not just look for the people who are most pro-Trump. Let's look at the people who most likely have the best chance to win. But, you know, either way, the Republican Party, and we've talked about this on the show for so many times, that Republican Party in California is in trouble. It may not, if John Cox doesn't make it into the runoff for governor, and right now it looks like it's Gavin Newsom against perhaps Villaraigosa, the former LA mayor. Well, that pushes the Republican Party into the shadows once again. And considering that the Republicans are not likely to make the Senate race either for the Dianne Feinstein campaign, the Republican Party is in big trouble. We were talking last week, I guess, with Beth about George Duke Majan and how the fact back in those days, Republicans were elected governor four times in a row, mm-hmm. twice with Duke Majan, twice with Pete Wilson. Now nobody knows who John Cox is. Very few people know who he is. He has very little money, very little name recognition. Even an endorsement by the president does not reverse. And this is not Trump's fault. The Republican Party has been disarray in California for a long time. But I think it just belies the fact that the Republican Party is in trouble and something has got to be done for making a two-party state again.
Let's end with a question about Capitol Hill. The House just failed to pass the farm bill. Politico called it an implosion. The New York Times called it a slugfest between the Freedom Caucus and more moderate Republicans. Are Republicans worried about how this looks ahead of the election in terms of what it says about the ability to govern?
They sure should be. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that by Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, announcing, that he's not going to seek re-election, but won't step down as Speaker, won't step down as Republican leader. The Republicans feel that there's no leadership from above and they could do what they want. The fact is, the implosion of the farm bill had nothing to do with the farm bill. It had a lot to do with conservatives and moderates fighting over immigration proposals. The Freedom Caucus, the more conservative wing of the Republican Party, wanted a much more restrictive immigration bill to come up for a vote. Moderates wanted protection for the Dreamers. They wanted a vote on that as well. And Paul Ryan has been promising both sides everything, and yet that's not enough for the conservatives and not enough for the moderates. So, yes, I mean, the farm bill did go down, and that may not be the final word of the farm bill, but it does show that the Republican Party cannot get its act together, cannot control its more conservative Freedom Caucus wing, and that's not good news for the Republican Party, who's definitely in danger of losing control of the House in November.
You know, when I heard this news about the farm bill, the first thing I thought to myself was, I wonder what Paul Ryan is thinking.
Oh, he's singing, what am I doing? What did I get myself involved in? And the thing that cost John Boehner the speakership last, 2 years ago, is the same thing that's hurting Paul Ryan, that he cannot control the more conservative elements of his party. And unless you're a leader who can do that, there's going to be battles going on beyond November. And especially if the Republican Party loses control, there's going to be a lot of finger pointing and retribution after November.
Well, we have complete political coverage on our website, capradio.org/insight. Political junkie Ken Rudin, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Pamela.
And before we go, it's worth mentioning that today is the last day to register to vote in time for the June primary in California. Your registration needs to be either postmarked or submitted online today. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.